WAUK Jackson, Milwaukee's real news and great conversation. A Civic Media station.
CBS News Brief. The medical examiner in Clark County, Nevada, confirms to CBS News that MLB's Pete Rose has died. No cause of death revealed. He was 83. Reporter Erica Gottlieb.
The league's all-time hit leader. Rose spent 24 years in the majors, his first 16 with the Cincinnati Reds. He also managed the Reds for 7 seasons before being banned from the sport in 1989 for gambling on games.
As the number of storm-related deaths climbs past 130 across the southeast due to Hurricane Helene, supplies are being airdropped and President Biden will visit North Carolina on Wednesday. In Asheville,
we lost power Thursday night, between Thursday night and Friday morning. We haven't had power, water, very low on food.
CBS's Chris Livesay has the latest on moves by Israel's military against Hezbollah in Lebanon today.
Israeli commandos are mounting limited incursions, that's limited cross-border raids, into Lebanon.
CBS News Brief, I'm Jennifer Kuiper.
This is your hometown radio, refreshed, keeping you informed, entertained, and connected locally across the Civic Media Network.
Civic Media News, I'm Derek Tritz. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. Red Cross volunteers from Wisconsin are helping people in the aftermath of Hurricane Helene. Terry Bell reports.
In all, 1,400 workers from around the country are part of the relief effort. 25 volunteers are from Wisconsin. Their assignments could change at any time. In fact, Red Cross volunteers have to be on standby in case they're needed more somewhere else in the country. I'm Terry Bell.
A high school football game in Milwaukee was cut short Friday when a gun in the stadium went off by accident. Police say an off-duty security guard accidentally fired his weapon during a game at Wisconsin Lutheran High School. The stands were emptied and everyone was sent home. The officer injured himself and was treated. The school is now going over its safety protocols. And that's what you need to know. I'm Derek Tritz and this is Civic Media News.
The Todd Alba Show.
They're eating the pets.
J.D. Vance has said on the air that he admitted it was all a lie. Pat Kreitlow, words have consequences.
Of course they do. When we're talking about the incendiary remarks about immigrants, we're not talking about the fact that it was Donald Trump and Donald Trump alone who killed the bipartisan border security and immigration reform bill.
The Todd Alba Show. Weekdays, noon till 2 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
A new choice. Milwaukee's real news and great conversation. 540 WAUK.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
It's time for the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is the voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
And welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks so much for being here today on the big program. Lots to get to, lots to talk about. Going to take a look back at the DNC convention. We got so much content, so many interviews, so many people we got to talk to while we were there for the four-day convention. Shook hands, kissed little old ladies. It was a wonderful, wonderful event. And look, one of the greatest things about doing those is people coming over and say, hey, I listened to you here or there. We had a couple of people who came up and said, the only reason I am here is because of the show. Moved me into action, wanted me to get involved, wanted me to go run to be a delegate, to run to be a school board member. It was really, I love these events. And this convention, like none other, extremely energetic and a lot of labor voices. And today, that's what we're going to spend our time talking to some labor leaders all across the labor spectrum. And really what the convention meant for organized labor and the idea that I've been talking about for years. I hear people say, oh, we need a labor party. Yeah, not going to happen. Much as I would love the idea of having a labor party, it's in our system, it's never going to happen. So what you do is you take over one of the major parties, which is what looks like they're doing. Not done. Looks like they're doing. And that's a good thing. I heard something like 20% of the delegates were union members. That's a pretty good start for taking over one of the major political parties. And look, for me, this is all about making lives better. So when I hear people talking about from every point of view, how we make workers' lives better, that to me is extremely exciting and a step in the right direction. So today, as I said, we're going to speak to some labor leaders. I'll get some thoughts on how things are working out, some of the things the Biden folks have done, some of the stuff that the Trump folks want to do to us, and you know maybe how we make sure that that doesn't happen. So I want to hear your thoughts. Thank you. While we were gone for the week, thank you for the wonderful things that were being said about our coverage. We're going to continue doing just that today on the program. We're going to talk to some of my favorite interviews from our labor leaders. I'm going to take a quick break. Right back after this with Tony Totti from the UAW. Stick around. Thanks for tuning in to The Rick Smith Show. Be sure to follow us on Twitter at Rick Smith Show, like us on Facebook, Instagram, and subscribe to our YouTube channel. You can find all that and much more at TheRickSmithShow.com.
Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So while we're spending time here in the convention talking about how we're going to move the world forward, we're going to make this a country worth handing off to our children, I understand there's been tragedy in a workplace of auto workers that, look, while Sean Fain was on stage talking about how we're going to fight for better wages, hours, conditions, unfortunately there was a death in a Toledo auto plant. And I want to bring on our friend Tony Totti, the president of UAW Local 14 out in that area, to share some thoughts while we're here in this convention and maybe what we need to be doing to make workplaces safer again. Tony, thanks for taking time for us.
Hey, thanks for having me. It's great to see you at the convention. A very somber, sad day, especially for the folks over in Toledo. Sadly, a Jeep member lost their life as a local 12 member. And we just always remind our workers and every worker, your safety is the overriding priority, and do whatever you can to work in a safe manner. Your life's more important than the product. And now we're, going to have to mourn as a labor community around the family and just remind everybody to, make something out of a terrible situation. Always look at your surroundings at work. You deserve to go home in the same condition that you came to work.
And we know that this will be investigated, yeah. that won't be covered up, because obviously there is a union there to make sure that it's all front and center. We find out how to make sure it never happens again.
Exactly. Continuous improvement. We talk about the wages and everything else, but when you look at unions, health and safety is probably the best thing that we do. And we negotiate it. You look at OSHA and everything else. That's because first we negotiate it, and then we try to, because we fight for everybody, not just ourselves, get it passed into law. So we will find out what happened here and try to prevent it from ever happening again, not only at our workplace, but every workplace.
Our heart goes out to the family and also the coworkers there, because that does filter down. We've had people in my workplace who have had accidents at work and have perished because of it. And it does affect everyone.
Yeah. It changes your workplace forever. You know where it happens. That he was a good guy, and his friends, it just changes you.
There's no segue that I can make that makes that any better, but I want to get your thoughts on what's going on here at the convention. Yeah. Your president, Sean Fain, gave what I thought was a great speech. I keep asking how I get one of those T-shirts, because, look, I think every union should put that logo on the shirt. Give me some thoughts on, as a local president, what do you think of your international guy speaking there?
He had a great night. We're proud of him to get our message across, put corporate America on notice. And when we fight, we win. And that's not just a slogan that we say. That's our reality. And we need to get to, when you take on one of us, you get all of us. And that's why we're trying to have our contracts expire at the same time, to get more like Europe. When it comes to messing around and finding out when you don't treat workers right, don't pay them correctly, in all of the things. So great night for labor when Sean Fain talked on Monday.
Well, this has been a great convention for labor, and I've been reiterating this time and time again because it is front and center in everything that we're seeing, because I think Democrats have finally found their roots. Yeah. I think they finally found the secret sauce that built that prosperous working class and that that ability to do better, and for them politically. So I'm thrilled that they found this. Yeah. My hope is they take it out of this convention and move on legislation and live it.
Yeah. You know, and part of unions, especially our union, you know, it's Article 41, Section 3. It's our duty as members to vote. And when you look at the UAW, you have a million members. Just think if all million members vote. You know, we advocate them to vote. We don't tell them who you have to vote for. We do make our recommendations, and that's with Harris Walls, and because they support us. And
well, because that's what leadership is. Yeah. Ultimately, and look, and this is where I've had a problem with my union's president.
Yep.
Leadership is about what's doing in the best interest of the institution and the members.
Yes.
Look, at the end of the day, we know what the Trump administration was. Mm-hmm. We know how bad they were. They're telling us how bad they're going to be. True leadership is looking at that and going, yeah, we don't want that.
Yep.
We're going to look at these other people, and these other people are telling us, we're going to do what you need. We're going to have your back. It seems simple to me, but, you know.
And part of that leadership is to stand up to members. You know, when you look at it, in our country, we're a two-party system. So 40% over here, 40% over here, and what's in the middle. So when you stand up and you make that endorsement based on principles and facts and past actions, you know, we need to stand up to our members that may not agree to us or with us, and we need to take on that heat. And especially with the, you know, with Trump, you know, a lot of people are really, they're voting against their own interest. And like you said, you look at Trump and all the appointments that he made to the Supreme Court and the NLRB and all the other things. It's anti-worker, and you just look at X with what he did with Elon Musk. They're bragging about firing people and laughing about it. If that doesn't tell you that these people aren't for working people, so you can vote for that guy if you're a member, but it's not going to be off union principles, and that's what we need to be strong about. We need to stand up and be proud of who we are and talk about our core principles.
Let me ask you this from a different perspective, because, you know, you look at the what's the matter with Kansas argument that they are voting in their interests.
Yeah.
Their interests are, you know, guns or your God or you know, spaghetti monsters. because you've allowed them to think of something beyond their wages, their hours, their conditions, their standard of living, because they know you're going to go out there and fight for them.
Right.
They know that you're doing a great job and you've given them this standard of living and they're going to be okay. Because I hear this all the time in my union. Mm-hmm. Well, that's not us.
Right.
We're going to be fine. Until we're not.
Exactly. And that second term, you know, it's like President Obama said, you know, the sequel's always worse. And they got the playbook. It's 2025, and it's trash. And until you're experiencing it, you know, it's easy to say, oh, don't worry about it or we'll be all right. Look at what happened the last time. We're all right now. The writing's on the wall, and you can't put your blinders on anymore. And I love the fact that unions – are calling truth to power and standing up to it, and we're not afraid of them.
Yeah.
So we'll take them on if we have to, but we just need to get back to the streets old school, door-to-door, make the phone calls and do all the things, because it's less than 80 days away, and we just need to go all in.
No, and look, unions are all about their members. Yep. It's about the working class. It's about, you know, I go back to the original roots of labor, the mine workers starting hospitals and schools, and the steel workers having hospitals, and all fighting for sabbaticals to go get education. Yeah. There's so many of those things, and I know your union, you're part of something that, you know, is trying to create it's a high school, right?
Oh, yeah.
That trains a generation to work on the coming technologies of EVs. That's the stuff we should want more of.
Yeah, we just cut the ribbon on that thing 2 weeks ago, and it's an EV school, state of the art. You know, it doesn't only impact the high school kids, any unemployed, underemployed, any displaced auto worker, and the dealers the mechanics from the dealership gets to go there and get trained as well. So we're going to fully utilize that facility, and that's what unions do. We created that.
Could that have happened during the Trump years?
It would have happened without Trump. You know, when you look at it, you know, Marcy Kaptur, a great congresswoman.
Love Marcy Kaptur.
Helped get the funding for that, and then Joe Biden signed it into law, and we got it. You know, Trump, hopefully he'd be asleep at the wheel, and he wouldn't notice if we got it in, because our representatives fight no matter who's in there. It's just easier to do when we win as a team, and that's why we need to get Walz and Harris in there.
There you go. Last question I've got for you. So this is your first convention, right?
It is. Great time. Oh, it's so electric. Last night was amazing. The first night was great. It'll be good to see former President Clinton and Walz tonight. I was born in Minnesota, so I'm proud of our connection. Somebody said, parents in Minnesota say you can grow up to be vice president, because this will be our third one. So
there you go.
Great convention. Thank you for having me. I truly appreciate it.
Anytime.
You.
Tony Toddy, appreciate the time. Thanks so much. All right. Gonna take a quick break. Right back. Stick around.
Saving work in America, one show at a time. The Rick Smith Show.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 1919. That was the day that Fanny Sellens and Joseph Starr Zaleski were murdered while standing up for workers' rights. Fanny was born in New Orleans. She married a garment worker in St. Louis. After her husband's death, she became involved in the labor movement in the garment industry in Chicago. The United Mine Workers of America recognized her organizing abilities. As a mine organizer, she worked in the Allegheny Valley in Pennsylvania. Mine operators in the area were known to be strongly opposed to union organizing. Mine managers made open threats against Fanny. Despite these threats, she stayed. And when the miners went on strike, she was there with them on the picket line. 6 weeks into the strike, she was shot and killed by company gunmen. Also murdered was a miner, Joseph Starr Zaleski. Fanny was just 47 years old. No one was ever convicted for the crimes. The United Mine Workers Journal reported on her death. The article declared two fallen picketers had been, quote, shot down in cold blood without provocation and without excuse. The article remembered Fanny as well known throughout all of the region as an angel of mercy among the families of working miners and other laboring men. A disturbing picture of Fanny's bullet-ridden body was taken at the morgue. In the picture, her head is smashed in. That picture was hung up in the union offices across Pennsylvania as a reminder of the cost of the struggle. The United Mine Workers dedicated a memorial to Sellens at her gravesite at Union Cemetery in Arnold, Pennsylvania. It has become an important site for annual Labor Day celebrations. Let us not forget those who came before us so that we may see where we are headed. Labor History in 2 brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show. For more information, go to laborhistoryin2.com, like us on Facebook, and follow us on the Twitters at Labor History in 2.
Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So again, as we've said here many times, it's great to see people in person that you've had on the program a number of times. And one of those folks, one of our friends from the Painters Union, Jimmy Williams Jr., he's the general president of the International Union of Painters and Allied Trades, IUPAT.org, the website, if you want to take a look at what they do. Jimmy Williams, thanks for taking time for us.
Yeah, Rick, good to see you in person.
It is good to see you in person. And this is an incredible event, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is. Really is. And the energy in this hall and in the you know, every, just in town in general, you can feel it. You can really feel it.
No, the energy is palpable. Have you been to these before?
You know what? This is my second convention, but first time being a delegate. First time being an actual delegate.
So what's that like?
Being a delegate, you know, it's different, because you're like, wait a second, I'm not a party insider, you know, I'm a labor leader, I'm a union guy, but being able to see just how the party is trying to put together the platform, being on the inside to be able to influence the platform, and you know, just having those conversations within the Democratic Party, it's an interesting week for sure.
No, this is exactly what I've been talking about almost every year I've been doing this show for the last 19. If you want to have a labor party, maybe take one of the two over, and you doing, being a delegate as a labor leader, kind of what I'm talking about.
Hey, Rick, I'll tell you, that's the plan. I mean, it has to be the plan. First off, we know that there's no chance you can take over the Republican Party as it's certainly set up right now. There's not even a door to be open. But within the Democratic Party under President Biden, we saw the shift towards labor. You saw the things that the administration has done over the last 4 years. Honestly, the future of the labor movement is we have to remain not only relevant, but we have to be a huge part of the Democratic Party. I heard a stat here this week, 20% of the delegates here are union delegates. We got to get that number to 40, 50, 60. That's how you take over the party.
No, absolutely. But you know, the messaging, look, I was at the 2016 convention. There was a labor presence, but it seemed to be an afterthought. I followed the 2008 convention, the 2012 convention. Again, seemed like, an obligation. This seems organic. This seems authentic. This seems real. And look, we'll see in policy, obviously, but the vibe here is on the labor side.
Yeah, when you look at, like, Monday night was union night. There's no doubt about it. When you have labor leaders from across the labor movement on the stage being able to address the delegates, then you had Sean Fain being able to have a primetime spot to talk about, you know, labor's issues, and then Joe Biden closing it as the most union president ever with chants of Union Joe coming down that were organic. That was not, no way was that planned.
No, and it's a message that I think needs to be shown in the broader public, and I hope people are out there watching it. I hope that it's just not in this bubble. I'm hoping it's getting out, especially to your members, because ultimately you're here to represent your members as well. What are you hearing from them in this cycle? What are you hearing about the Harris Walz ticket? Anything positive? Anything negative? What are we hearing?
I'm hearing more positive than I would have assumed, because we've talked, and you and I've talked about this over the course of the last 3-4 years, about just how split our membership has been, and especially with the way Donald Trump approaches the working class. And I was surprised, because I thought there would be a little bit more pushback and maybe even have longer and harder conversations. Truth be told, that energy is actually making its way into our membership too, and we're seeing it. And I didn't really think that was going to happen that short, but it is. And I think people wanted a change. They did. I saw a stat that this is the first time since 1976 that there's not a Bush, Clinton, or Biden on the ballot.
Yeah, no. And that's one of those things where you go, someone who's radically normal, like Tim Walz, Kamala Harris, who came up through poverty, near poverty, went to an HBCU. These are radically, extremely normal people.
Yep. And you see it. You've seen it in what I – look, I always call it like it is. You know, too many politicians are scripted and have been over the years, and I think Joe Biden kind of transcended that. And I think that shift away from the scripted drama of elections and really telling the story. Last night, Tim Walz, and seeing his family and seeing his entire life be put on the stage last night just really brought, you know, tear to my
had
eyes.
Had to. Because you can see your family there, couldn't you?
Absolutely.
I mean, I look at Tim Walz and I see my family. I see my neighbors. I see someone who is, like I said, radically normal.
Yep, absolutely. And that's what the American public needs. But within the labor movement, Tim Walz was such a great choice because it does bring our values to the table.
Now, you talked about your members and moving this. And that's not surprising, because I got to tell you, the more you educate about the Trump years, and for labor, for you, Trump years were not a great time.
No. And everybody, you know, the facts still matter, right? It isn't going to be just cult of personality. And while right now everybody's riding high here, from within the party and getting that buzz of having a new ticket, that doesn't last forever. And the policies still matter. And when you look back at the Trump years, I mean, they really, really, really did nothing to help working class people.
Now, you're a building trades guy. Clearly, I think page 604 of the Project 2025 targeted right at you and the rest of your tradesmen. to eliminate prevailing wage, to eliminate project labor agreements. And then you get further into the labor chapters that they had, basically destroy and dismantle unions and bring us suggestion box unions or Mother May I unions. Is that playing? Is that something you're getting out to your membership?
Yeah, I mean, Project 2025, to a lot of us that spend time reading policy and seeing things like that, it's like, you know, this is a joke. But for our membership, you know, being able to take snippets and really show them what this is the agenda. And don't forget, for a building trades union, the elimination of the registered apprenticeship programs is also in Project 2025. And those are the things that our members care about the most, because they value their hard work in their apprenticeship programs. They value their collective bargaining agreements, the ability to have prevailing wage, project labor agreements. Those things resonate.
So the question that I keep asking people, is it the negative that sells or the positive? Because we know what Donald Trump did during the 4 years. We know what Project 2025 says. But we also know what Joe Biden did during his term. We know the infrastructure bill was pushed for. He wanted a much bigger, much chunkier, much broader investment. But we got that. Do your members lean towards the positive, hey, I'm working, or the negative, hey, they're going to take my – where do you see this going, or is it both?
I think it's always both on some levels, because that's the world we live in today. But we've chosen to go the positive route. And I think you have to. As labor leaders and within the movement, our job is to educate. Our job is to educate, to agitate, to organize. And you can't do that if you're constantly talking negative. You have to be able to show a better way forward. And to us, we've chosen the path of we're going to deeply educate our members. And at the end of the day, they got to make their decisions. Look, that doesn't mean sometimes you got to point out the negativity that's on the other side. We absolutely have to do that as well. But from here till election day, it really does have to be about educating the membership about the real truths.
Now, I look at the Biden administration and all of the things that I think have been transformational. I think Biden has moved the ship in a direction that's going to move this country forward and hopefully revive the American dream of a middle-class existence. Do you see those 4 years of Biden translating into 4 or 8 years of Harris? Do you see a seamless shift, or do you maybe see something different out of Harris? Thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's kind of the unknown that exists right now. Because it is new. The ticket's new. The energy's new. And maybe that creates opportunities for us to also think differently, which excites me as an organizer. But there's no doubt that carrying on the legacy of President Biden's what will go down in history as a historic, historic four-year presidency has to be a main topic for us within the building trades and within the AFL-CIO to continue to advocate and push what will be the administration to look into the future too.
No, and look, you know, I know there were a number of Teamsters here on the stage. You're talking about Biden saving their pension, which is a huge thing for multi-employer pension funds that Biden did. In fact, got something better than the Butch Lewis Act was asking for. The fear becomes, in my view, as someone who benefited from that, from having a Teamsters pension, that Trump and, well, Tim Scott has said they're going to repeal that. They're going to undo that. Is that possible, do you think, with a Trump administration?
No, I don't. I don't, because that's the value of legislation. And what Joe Biden was able to accomplish is simply amazing. To be able to pass that many bills at a time with such a divided government really is amazing. And to wait to use reconciliation after passing the bipartisan infrastructure bill and the ARP to still be able to move on the Inflation Reduction Act and using the tools of the Senate and being able to use reconciliation, that's truly monumental. So no, I don't believe they can, because those loans have already been given to those funds. Those funds have already been shored up. And if Trump and his people think they can roll that back, I don't think it's true. It's just to be able to just put those talking points out there.
Yeah, just, again, to divide us. So last line of questioning I've got, because obviously we've been talking about Harris and Walz and talking about the things that they want to do. They're going to be able to do nothing without a Senate, without a House. The down ticket, I think, just as important. Thoughts on where things should go here?
Listen, I mean, first off, we heard from what I believe is going to be the next Speaker of the House, and Hakeem Jeffries last night. And I really believe there is a good shot at taking back a majority in the House. I do. I think the Senate's going to be a slugfest. I just think it is. And I do think that there's a chance, but I think we have to prepare ourselves for a continued divided government, which is all the more reason why we need to have the White House, because all the policies on the things like we spoke about, like pension relief, like implementing the bipartisan infrastructure bill, like following through on the Inflation Reduction Act, if we can remain in the White House, we will be able to see that legacy through for at least the next 4 years.
That's why elections matter. And as Obama said, don't boo vote. Get out there and vote. But Jimmy Williams Jr., I appreciate you taking some time out of your busy schedule. I know you got a lot to do. Thanks so much for sitting down with us.
Rick, you're better looking in person.
Wow, compliments will get you just about everywhere. Jimmy, I appreciate the time, man. Thank you.
Thank you.
I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. What do you think coming out of this convention? Are you hearing it? Are you hearing the positivity? Back after this. Stick around.
Saving work in America, one show at a time. The Rick Smith Show. A voice for real news and great conversation in Milwaukee. 540 WAUK.
You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Mild tonight with a mostly clear sky and a low close to 60. A mix of sun and clouds, though, for tomorrow and cooler. High only to the mid-60s and breezy. But it's back up into the low 70s for highs on Wednesday and Thursday and mostly sunny. Currently, it's 66.
The Maggie Dawn Show.
The Second Amendment is designed to keep the power in this country with the people.
It's not the Second Amendment that preserves power in the people. It's elections, you moron. A dictator like Donald Trump that is a king and immune from prosecution. That is what erodes democracy. Kamala Harris and Uncle Tim Walz, they own guns. Nobody's coming for them. Chillax, Glenn. Get yourself some facts.
The Maggie Dawn Show. Weekdays from 2 till 4 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So as we wrap up day two here in Chicago, lots of interesting emails, lots of folks responding to some of the things that we've seen here on the program, some of the things we've seen during the convention, and the really great part about it, it's been mostly positive. The hope and joy thing seems to be catching on. Seems to be something folks really are interested in. So appreciate the reaching out. Appreciate the emails. Way too much to get to. But this idea that it's about making lives better, and this is the focus that we came here thinking they were going to hammer on, because, of course, it makes sense, right? Ultimately, I think, you know, Rick Wilson, when we talked to him earlier, hit on something that I think I'd like my Republican friends to think about. Because Rick's conversion away from, you know, the rhetoric that my generation has been, you know, basically force-fed, is that, you know, conservatism is about tax cuts. Republicans have put all of their eggs in the tax cut basket and pushed, you know, again, as much as we can do to make corporations happy, as much as we can allow them to consolidate, as much as we can allow them to deregulate. And this has created the environment in which we find ourselves. So as I said about, you know, Joe Biden for the last 2 years, this guy transformationally is moving us away from that kind of model. 40 years of Republican policy, 40 years of bad ideology, and back to what his generation understood, which is if workers have power and corporations have power and you bring them together on an equal plane, they usually come out with a good agreement. And we have a decent society. Now, I do find it interesting, some of the blowback that I've gotten, and it's been mostly from my brother Teamsters, who are angry over my position on President Sean O'Brien, whom I absolutely supported, and the work that they're doing and organizing and bringing people together and fighting for good contracts is fantastic. The sad reality is the distraction was his appearance at the RNC and the whole, you know, thumbs up thing with Trump. I wish we could spend more time on the let's make lives better. And, you know, Monday night you saw working people, a wide array of diverse working people coming together and moving us in a direction that I think is going to be very helpful. Now, you know, in talking with Rick Wilson, I go back to this education because I want there to be a functional Republican Party. You know, as I was listening to Rick talk about, hey, you need labor unions. You need that balance. You need them to be able to say, hey, we demand a portion of the profits that we make. And when he said, look, and I think one of the most important quotes out of, you know, the working class of this country, especially the red hat folks right now, have been sold on this idea that it's the black and brown communities, it's the others. They're the reason that life hasn't turned out the way it was supposed to. They're the reason our wages are going down. They're the reason that we've been struggling to make ends meet. It's them. And as he said, look, McKinsey is responsible for more job losses than anyone. Because you're pushing this ideology of let's seek the cheapest labor in the most exploitable countries. Bad policy? Yes, absolutely. But a corporatist mentality that, look, quite frankly, as I pointed out to Rick, Democrats were part of as well. I was never a huge Bill Clinton fan. The DLC did not do any favors for working people. This idea that you're going to train your way out of all these job losses is, well, just ludicrous. And I go back to, you know, my experience growing up in Cleveland, watching the deindustrialization, watching the steel mills close, watching the machine shops close, watching those auto factories pare down to where they're just a mere shadow of what they once were. The idea of redundancy and getting rid of people, that to me is, that's the lesson from what Rick had to say. And the hope is that we listen to that. I would love to have a Republican Party with Rick Wilson at the head of it. Do we agree on everything? No, not even close. And that's a good thing because I think you do need to have, you need to have both sides at the table. I don't want the pendulum to swing too far one way or the other. Call me a centrist if you have to, but I know that you can bang out the best agreement if you have to. Our political system has given both sides cover to not get things done for working people. And that's where a lot of this anger is. But I go back to the statement by Rick, you know, that we've allowed a media culture to spring up. The right-wing messaging mastery machine has honed in on this message of it's them. It's the other. Where we used to know. We used to know which side we were on. We used to see the corporate excesses. We used to see the billionaires who, you know, in the case of Elon Musk, fire striking workers. Our history is riddled with rich people hiring working class people to go after other working class people. That divide and conquer, it works. And the hope is that while we're here, some of the messaging gets out. Now, how many Republicans, how many of my red hat friends are watching any of this? Very little. But they should. I watched the RNC convention because I wanted to see what the Republicans were bringing to the table. And there wasn't much. In fact, you know, not a lot of star power there either. You know, the Democrats here have put together a very impressive program. Now remember, as I've said from the start, this is about political theater. This is putting on the best face. This is about getting Kamala Harris and Tim Walz elected. That's what this is about. But it's also about saying, what kind of a vision? What direction do we want as a country? And that comes back to us, doesn't it? What kind of a country do we want? Do we want one where we want to encourage families to have children? Help them with paid medical leave, help them with childcare, make sure that the education their children get is second to none, make sure that they don't have to worry about health security and retirement security down the road. Maybe just a thought. These are things we can and should be doing without question. In the richest country in the history of humanity, we should not be, we shouldn't be struggling the way working people are. I ran into a good friend while I was here. He sought me out, and we had a lovely conversation. And one of the things he hit, because he moved to the UK, one of the things that he hit me with that I wasn't prepared for was he goes, you know, I love London. I'm never coming back. He goes, you know, I pay 4%, 4.5% tax, and I have health care for my entire life. He's an American living in London. His wife is with them as well. They're about to have children. So 4.5%. That's it. And you go, what do I pay as a portion of my income? What is it that I get? Wait a second. Hold on. Somewhere in the 18 to 25%, about 24% is what we pay for our health care. So when you stop and you think about what could be with smart policy, with sound investment, what could we do? Could we have a social safety net that would encourage families to have children? Because look, the right, J.D. Vance kept talking about, you know, what is it about the women who are childless, something about, I don't know. Not all of us have mother-in-laws who can take a year off to come spend raising our children. Not all of us, like Trump, can hire nannies to take care of our children. Working people have real struggles. And out of this convention, I think we're going to see a lot of that, a lot of the discussions around that. On day one, we saw a lot of discussions around abortion rights and reproductive rights, which rightly so. It is a major issue. And you know, I was just reading the news the other day that said, you know, moderate white women are flocking to Kamala Harris. What kind of a country do we want? And I bring that up time and time again. Because the emails I've gotten, you know, people are like, yeah, we want strong labor rights. Yeah, we want strong voting rights. We want strong protections in the workplace and strong protections for consumers. We want a government that's going to work for us. And I think that's the thing. Because as I had this conversation with this friend, he goes, look, you know, the government helps. That you get things for your tax dollars. You get health care. You get retirement security. You get help raising your children. So that while you're off working, you're not worried that the end is near. So, again, I come back to this moment of, what kind of a country do we want? Where do we go from here? And how do we get to that place? That's the question. If you didn't get a chance to listen to Joe Biden's speech, I highly, highly suggest you do. Well worth the time, well worth the effort. If you missed any of today's program, make sure you download the podcast. Wherever you get your favorite podcast, you will find ours. And as always, I appreciate you being here. Hope you've enjoyed our coverage thus far of the convention. Email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com. We'll be back in the studio next week. Tomorrow, back here from the United Center here in Chicago. And hopefully we don't get hung up in security again. Thanks so much for being here. We'll see you back here next time.
You've been listening to The Rick Smith Show. Email Rick at rick@therickSmithShow.com. Until next time, this has been The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk. Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Check out our website, therickSmithShow.com, as we're here at the United Center in Chicago for the DNC convention. As you know, as you've been paying attention, hope you've been paying attention, this is where the action is. As I said, what I love about coming to these places, you run into people that, well, you've known in the past, you've had on the program in the past, maybe forgotten about a little bit, and that's why I'm just thrilled to have my next guest, Mandela Barnes. You may remember Mandela ran for Senate back in 2022. We saw him on the tour when we were in Wisconsin in 2022 for the Working Class Heroes Tour. Former Lieutenant Governor Mandela Barnes, thanks for taking time for us.
Hey, of course. Happy to take time. Glad I saw you when I first walked into the convention center. If I look like all dazed and confused, it's because I was dazed and confused.
No, that's the great thing. I don't know how we got the spot we got, but
you have prime seating.
It is clean living.
Yeah,
I'm telling you that. But how you been? What have you been up to?
So I've been really good. You know, obviously not doing the thing that I wish I could have been doing right now. The thing that
makes two of us.
Thank you so much. The thing that I worked so hard for, and the thing that so many other people. That's the other part about it. I know what I put into the campaign, but also think about the countless volunteers, the grassroots donors, the folks who showed up for the first time to knock on the door or make a phone call for a candidate. I have such deep appreciation and respect for those folks. So, you know, not doing the thing that I wish, you know, that we wish I could have been doing. However, still been able to stay involved and engaged in a very real way. Two big projects I'm working on. One is Power to the Polls, Wisconsin. We are focusing our efforts on Black, brown, and working class voters all across the state. And we've had some incredible successes. This past spring, we helped flip the Green Bay City Council for the first time, and I cannot tell you when. We were the only outside spender in that race. We certainly were very active in the previous spring election to elect Justice Janet Protasiewicz to the Supreme Court. And we do this by not just showing up during election time, not just 90 days before an election. We have a plan for year-round sustained engagement because folks are tired of being taken advantage of. People are tired of you just showing up to ask for a vote but no follow-up. And in addition to talking about candidates, we talk about issues, and we also talk about things that have been happening or things that have not been happening, and if folks are frustrated and upset, how to properly address those concerns.
Yeah, no, it's about building that community. It's about constant engagement. I keep trying to tell my labor friends this.
Yeah.
You can't ramp up a month or 2 months before an election. You've got to be part of the fabric of the community, part of the fiber of that area to get people in moving in that direction. So that's 100%. Great news.
Yeah, no, and it's very exciting for me to have a return to organizing. But there's also a project. It's called Forward Together Wisconsin. This is an organization that I started from scratch to more successfully implement the Inflation Reduction Act in Wisconsin. And this is where we get to marry environmentalism as well as organized labor. We have a big project with a group called Green Homeowners United. It is a woman-owned union contractor. And with this, we've been able to help weatherize homes all across the city of Milwaukee so far. We're expanding into other areas. And we've been doing this through charitable giving for working class families and low-income families, people who can't necessarily afford the upfront cost for an energy assessment or for insulation work to be done. So we're helping folks who wouldn't typically be a part of the climate conversation, the sustainability conversation, and we are making it very real for them to show how active the Biden-Harris administration has been and how the impacts of that legislation is truly life-changing, if not just cost savings.
Yeah, no, it's a program like that that I would love to see on the national scale, much like during my grandparents' era where they built like little Levitt towns all across this country, so that people coming back from the war could have affordable housing, something kind of we might need a little bit. You know, it would be great if we could get some affordable housing with some energy independence. Might sound like a future worth having.
And it can't all just be a developer giveaway for low-income housing, right? This has to be truly, truly beneficial for working-class folks, for lower-income folks, and truly beneficial for the whole, not just to line folks' pockets. We see this too often where there are winners and there are losers, and there are a handful of winners far too often. People that make out like bandits, people that basically are able to accumulate a large swath of the benefit for the American people, and the rest is just spread out. And that's why we're in this situation that we're in, where income inequality is at an all-time high, where wages have not kept up with inflation, where people are struggling to find adequate health care options.
Now, you know, obviously you're doing this work with Black and brown and working class communities. I listened to the orange guy say how wonderful he's doing with all of those groups, and I'm curious your assessment.
Yeah, my assessment is much like other assessments of things that come out of the former president's mouth. And that is a lot of inaccuracies, a lot of lies, things that just are not true. And it feels as if he's working to convince himself more than the American people, because folks who have lived it, people who have experienced it in real time, know that quality of life wasn't demonstrably better at all under Donald Trump. It has all been fallacy. And we're talking about long-term success of this country and for the lives of working-class people. There has been no better candidate for working-class Americans than, there's been no better president for working-class Americans, at least in my lifetime, than Joe Biden.
No, and hopefully Kamala Harris picks up that mantle and moves it forward. And look, I look at Tim Walz, her choice for VP, and I don't see how they cannot, given the her record and his record. I see great things in the future.
I absolutely see great things in the future. And having been in part of the administration for 4 years, I think that Vice President Kamala Harris is in prime position to carry that banner of fighting for working class Americans. Not just carry it through the campaign, but carry it through 8 years, hopefully, of governing this country.
No, I'm with you. So we're here at this big event. One of the things I've been saying is I've been to past conventions. I don't remember feeling the same kind of energy. And I know that sounds like it's kind of a cliche, but everybody here seems to be, everything's positive, it seems, so far.
Things are positive so far, and things are, still largely positive, even on the outskirts of convention. And, I'm honestly overwhelmed right now. It's a lot going on, and, I think we should appreciate that there's a lot going on, and there's a lot for us to celebrate and be happy for. At the same time, it's not even about ignoring other things, right? Like, I think, as I've said before, and I've said many times, we are a big tent party. There will be protests, right? And that is fine, because if you look at the other party that just squashes dissent immediately, I think about the former vice president, Mike Pence, who had a snowball's chance in hell of becoming the president because he dared go against Donald Trump. That is a party of one person's personality, and it is damaging to this entire country, and people are paying the price as a result. You have people from the village board level to state legislative level to all the way up to Congress and the U.S. Senate who will not stand up and do the right thing in that party because they are, quite frankly, afraid of the retribution of Donald Trump. And that's not the kind of person I want running this country.
No, as I've been saying, I think there has to be a resounding victory for Kamala Harris and Tim Walz in November in order for the Republicans to find themselves. Because, look, I still want there to be two functional parties. I do want there to be, I don't want pendulums to swing too far to one way or another.
Debate is healthy.
Absolutely.
Debate is healthy. I
want competing ideas.
Exactly.
The problem is the Republicans don't have any ideas, it seems.
Yeah, it's like a battery. We are the positive charge. There's a negative. But you got to have both in order for anything to function.
So, coming out of this, because clearly this is going to be a presentation of the best of this duo, what do you expect to see over the next couple of days? And then coming out of this, what do you hope people take from it?
Well, I'm certain that we'll see a vision for the United States of America. And that's, again, something that we didn't see at the convention in my hometown of Milwaukee. And I hope that people will take away a sense of optimism. I hope that people will leave here rejuvenated. I hope that people will leave here ready to fight like our democracy depends on. I hope that people will leave here fighting like reproductive rights depend on. I hope people will leave here fighting like voting rights and labor rights depend on it, because they most certainly do. And it is important for us to show up and act like it.
Yeah. Now, obviously, as an organizer, you're on the ground talking with people every day in Wisconsin, knocking on doors, kissing babies, all that stuff. Maybe not as a candidate, maybe. What's the sense that you're getting from people? I know in my neighborhood, some of the rhetoric is tapped down. I'm not seeing so many of the flags flying. People aren't as obnoxiously wearing the hats. Are you seeing kind of the same thing in your area?
Yeah, so I actually took a bike ride yesterday over the span of 2 days from La Crosse, Wisconsin to Milwaukee. And you do see some interesting yard signs along the route. I actually did that same ride last year. And while certainly there were number of Trump signs that were still out there. It's just the way life is. I think it paled in comparison to last year, to the riot last year. I think the intensity was a little bit different than it was on last year's riot.
No, because I'm looking at this and it's a different feel. Obviously, a different feel from 2016 to 2020, but an enormously different feel from 2020 to 2024.
Yeah, certainly a different feel. But again, we can't take a single thing for granted. We've taken things for granted before, and we see how that happens. We have to play, we have to play every round. We have to show up every day as if we're down a point.
Now, last line of questioning I want to get into, because clearly we want Kamala Harris and Tim Walz to win at the top of the ticket. But like you had, in 2022, you needed some help. I think people running in these races, Senate, House, state houses across the country, going to need some help, some down ticket, some coattails.
Do you think
these two bring that?
I think so. And we have new legislative maps in Wisconsin, too, which gives us an opportunity, a shot to make a larger dent in the state legislative seats, to have a bigger impact on folks' daily lives. And one thing is going to come up all the time, once you get out of a room like this, once you get into the world, people will always ask, can she win? Can she win? Is she going to be able to do it? And I can tell you that I obviously had those same questions. Can he win? Can he raise the money? Well, I broke fundraising records in the state. I came within a point of defeating an incumbent, the closest U.S. Senate race in the state of Wisconsin in over 100 years, the closest challenge to an incumbent last cycle. So, yes, I could have won. And I can tell you this, the people who believed that I could win the most, for sure, not the most, but the people who certainly for sure believe that I can win are Republicans. And that is why they spent unseen amounts of money in third party advertising in this race, in third party spending. It was the largest largest amount of super PAC spending in any Senate race. We were outspent by $26 million in outside spending, and I lost by 1 point.
That is obscene.
$26 million. So of course it's certainly possible, and we need to make sure that Republicans are not the only ones that think Kamala Harris can win.
No, and look, those numbers just obscene, which leads me to go, geez, we need campaign finance reform in a bad way, along with so many other things. I know I said last question, but I got to ask you something else. We going to get you back on the trail, because I thought you ran a great campaign. I thought you an incredible spokesperson, very personable on the trail. We saw you a couple of times. It was great. Any future plans?
Well, I really do appreciate that. And I can say that it's not a no. That's all I can say right now. Because you never know what the future holds.
No. That's what I was looking for.
I'm honored to still be involved. Even at this level, I can tell you that I'm not going away. The answer is more yes than no. But it has to be the right thing, the right opportunity. I don't want to run for something just for the sake of running for it. I need to be able to put as much of my heart and energy into it as I did the last go around.
No, that's the honesty. I don't know. I couldn't possibly. No. Everyone's in.
I'm more yes than no.
There you go. Mandela Barnes, I appreciate you taking time for us.
Hey, thank you so much.
Enjoy the convention.
Hey, you too.
I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, rick@therickssmithshow.com. I'm going to take a quick break back here in Chicago. Again, I want to hear your thoughts. rick@therickssmithshow.com. Right back. I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 1831. That was the year Nate Turner led a slave rebellion in Southampton, Virginia. From a young age, Turner believed he had a purpose ordained by God. Turner had learned to read from one of his master's sons. He had also learned a deep hatred of slavery from his mother. He came to be regarded as a spiritual leader, or a prophet, by many of the nearby enslaved people. In February of 1831, there was a solar eclipse. Turner took it as a sign that it was time to lead a revolt. He began to make plans. Then, along with seven other enslaved people, he killed the entire family that owned his plantation. The group made their way from plantation to plantation, killing 51 whites in all. Their
plan was to raid the town of Jerusalem. But before they could reach the town, they were met by a militia of 3,000. The small band of between 60 and 75 insurrectionists were no match for the militia. More than 50 slaves were executed. Many more were beaten. Some were from as far away as neighboring North Carolina and had nothing to do with the uprising. White hysteria swept the South. More repressive slave codes were passed in many states. Harsher restrictions were enacted against enslaved people for preaching, being educated, and assembling in large groups. That year, Virginia, Maryland, and Florida all passed laws restricting even freed black men from carrying a gun. Nate Turner escaped the militia into the Dismal Swamp. He stayed there for 6 weeks before he was discovered. He was tried, convicted, and hung. Many historians credit Turner's rebellion and the harsh repression that followed in hastening the coming Civil War and the end of the slave labor system. Labor History in 2 brought to you by the Illinois.
This is 540 WAUK Jackson, Milwaukee's real news and great conversation. A Civic Media Station.